You're listening to Rambling Business, the only multimedia podcast with Rick and Brandon,
where we get into your business no matter where it is.
And today we'll be talking about turning rock into gold. Rambling Business continues our Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada series by hopping over to the Granville Island Public Market. There, Rick and Judy met artist Michelle Vulama, who can bring out colorful faces from ordinary rocks. Really cool art.
Yeah, it's something that you really stop and look at. It's just like not walking by something.
Yeah.
You turn your head.
It's really surprising. See how she took this unique talent and turned it into a successful money-making business. Also, stay tuned for our tax deals and business takeaways coming up.
Michelle Vulama discovered her artistic passion at a very early age, experimenting, like I guess most artists do. But she experimented with shoebox dollhouses, vintage sock puppets, and sketches of pig-faced people.
Huh.
Yeah. I guess you like you have like a somebody in a suit and tie, but they have a pig face.
Kind of
like,
yeah. You know, kind of that makes sense, I guess, yeah. In a weird way.
Yeah. Well, I mean, these artists, actually, I remember seeing that kind of thing on a business that does meat produce. They had a three suits, and they had a pig, a cow, and a lamb or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And so that kind of reminds me of that. So Michelle took materials that she could find, like most artists do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But she took even garbage, and she transformed them into art. But not only just art, but she transformed them into value that people would like. So, that old thing about Andy Warhol, they said, can you define art? He says, yeah, anything I can get away with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
And so it's really art is art, but marketing art or art that you can do something for a living is mm-hmm. art that other people see value in.
Yeah, exactly. It has to be something, whether it's grotesque or whatever,
mm-hmm.
Right. made out of trash, that people are interested in and strikes a chord.
And so among some of the usual canvases that she was using as a kid and growing older were jam jars, cereal boxes, and rocks. Now can you see that? You've never really watched All in the Family, right?
No.
Yeah, see, if Archie Bunker, I was thinking about this, if Archie Bunker had come in and his daughter was making art out of all these different things, he'd go, "What are you doing? Why can't you color in a book like all the other little girls do? Here, let me get you a book. Here, just go inside the lines. It'll be nice. What are neighbors going to think? You're sitting here drawing on trash, on old cereal boxes for this love of Pete, So, I mean, it's, but I don't know if her parents did that, but that would be in Bronx, New York, where he was, or Staten
Island.
That
was like a 50s kind of show, right?
No, it really wasn't. It was 70s, but it was in either Staten Island or Brooklyn.
That seems like a very 50s ethos to me.
Well,
like, you need to do things, everything new. I guess 70s, I guess recycling really got big in the 90s, so.
Well, yeah, but in his case, it was because the way he was.
Yeah.
And all of his old-fashioned ideas, and that was the whole thing. His kids were these 70s hippies, cutting-edge type thing. So I'd always think that, Michelle's parents think that way, or maybe some of the neighbors think that way about when she was doing this stuff as a little girl, not knowing what was going to happen in the future. But she wasn't like other artists who would use rocks as backdrops. And you've seen that.
Yeah.
You've seen a really pretty rock, and then they put a piece of jewelry over it.
Yeah.
Or a sculpture, like a bronze sculpture on top of a rock.
Yeah.
And so that's using it as a backdrop. She mm-hmm. actually uses the rock as the main focus of what she's doing. And so that made her really unique and really cool. And you really see that when you see her stuff. And by the way, if you want to see her artwork on our site, we took a few pictures while we were there, some of her artwork, even some with her in it. And so you can really see that really nice stuff. And we'll also give you her site too, so you can go to that also. So, but she said, my wife, your mom does art. Mm-hmm. She paints and she's artistic.
She's more of a 2D sort of artist though.
A 2D?
2D.
2D. Oh, 2D. I thought you were like making a pun. Judy is a 2D.
Judy is a 2D artist, yeah.
Yeah, right. Oh.
But yeah, she paints on walls and canvases.
Right. She does murals like that. Michelle, she said that when she looks at a rock, she sees faces. She sees that the rock is already sketched, a face in it, and all she's doing is just finishing it off. And that's pretty cool.
It's like, what do you hear from sculptors? There's a block of marble, and I'm just chipping off the pieces that aren't needed and exposing what's already inside.
And that's what I was thinking about when I was listening to her. I was thinking about, you know, Michelangelo and David saying, okay, I'm going to have this, you know, whatever it is, 25-foot guy in this piece of granite. It was granite marble, right? Yeah.
Italians love marble. Granite's from, I think, near us. You always think of, like, Maine and all of the East Coast of America is where all the granite mining goes.
Well, West Coast too. Yosemite is all granite. what she does is she emphasizes the rock's natural blemishes, like the curves and the contours and all the little things that you would say, oh, I can't use this rock because it has this problem on it. You know, she uses that in her art to make it look better. But back in the early days, of course, she couldn't make a living doing this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because, again, we get back to how do people see value in what you're doing? And it doesn't matter if you are an artist or an accountant. If you can't prove your value to people, they're not going to pay for it. And so in her early days, she actually had worked at different places. And basically, it's because she was trying to fund her passion in art, like so many people that you know do in Los Angeles.
Yeah. Right? That's all of the most of at least the waiter and waiters,
waiters in West Hollywood and Hollywood.
Yeah, exactly. And everything. I mean, like, I have friends who are working in museums and who are guiding tours and working in print shops. It's whatever you can find work money to support the thing you want to do.
So when we look in a pond and we see a rock, one person's sight of that rock is it's a rock. It's a nice rock in the pond. When she looks at it, she sees different landscapes, faces, and different things like that. So she sees things just differently than other people. So since 1999, she has been actually highly acclaimed in various showings and galleries and exhibits in the Vancouver area, which this area that we went to, this Granville Island Public Market, actually had a section in it that was art. A lot of artists.
Oh, great.
So we saw somebody with a louving, making those louving machines. What is it called?
Looms. Weaving stuff.
Saw that too. So we saw some really neat stuff there on that island.
I think, is an Olympic event. Right? The Louvre? Oh, no, that's an art museum.
No.
The Louvre.
The Louvre. Oh, the Louvre. There we go. That's right. Yeah, Louvre. Oh, that's right. When we go to France, we go Louving.
Yeah, that's true.
That's right. We go walking through there looking at the Mona Lisa.
Yeah, exactly.
So in 2009, she opened an established location at the Granville Island Public Market. This is where we saw her and met her and where lots of other people see her and write articles and do wonderful things for her. Her latest direction, though, is to paint pieces that become part of a landscape or a full rock wall in a room.
Wow.
She was currently working on a 10-foot by 8-foot wall, rock wall. You know, you have rock, you've seen those.
Yeah.
And she's making it into an art piece with faces and all these different things she does.
Oh, great.
Isn't that amazing? So cool. Yeah, really, I hope that she sends her finished product to me, you know, because...
A picture.
She has our email address. Yeah, picture. Well, yeah. Don't send the wall.
Yeah.
Yeah, I hope she sends that. But that's where she's going in this, but it all started from what a lot of people think of being just garbage or just natural rocks laying in a stream or on the side of a hill somewhere.
To learn more about Michelle Vulama, go to www.michellevulama.com. V-U-L-A-M-A. Is how you spell Vulama. So that would be...
You're pretty good at spelling.
Thank you. It's very easy when you have it written down on a piece of paper. You're listening to Rambling Business. We'd like to thank our sponsor, Rick E. Norris and Accountancy Corporation. If you'd like to get the full experience, check out our website for videos, music, pictures, takeaways, and travel tips. www.ramblingbusiness.com. Now it's time for our tax tales, where we tell you about strange and unusual taxes from the past and the present.
Tax tales.
And this is a really weird one. We've done a lot of strange taxes, and, you know, what foods are allowed to be taxed certain
That's
ways.
Right.
But in Canada, the National Post says that blank CDs, you know, you go get a thing of CDs. I mean, not very much anymore.
Compact discs.
Right.
Not civil defense.
Yeah. For younger people, they're the things that sometimes you hang in trees to scare birds away.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Or certificate deposits. They might scare birds away, too.
Yeah. Depends how much a down payment is. But Canada says they have a tax on blank CDs because specifically they assume that the media that's going to be put on them violates copyright. So they're just taxing you. There's no other good reason to have a blank CD other than like steal music. So we're going to charge you as if you're stealing music.
Okay, so do they pay this tax to the musicians?
I have
no
idea.
Who lost the royalties?
Or is it just the usual music sales tax that they have them do?
Ah.
Yeah. Now it's time for our travel tip, where we tell you what fun things you can do in the Vancouver area.
When you're in Vancouver, go a little bit north and see if you can stand 230 feet above the waters of the Capilano River, because you will be on a 450-foot long suspension bridge.
Wow.
Now, this is just not like your regular, you know, you've seen like, you know, yeah, the Golden Gate Bridge is a suspension bridge, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And you know, you've seen walk bridges like at, I mean, lots of different places. Remember, you've been at Disneyland?
Mm-hmm.
You know that? This actually makes turns around rocks.
Wow.
And it's hanging off like the side of the rock.
That's incredible.
Yeah. This is something definitely will test your fear of heights.
I guess I can't do it.
Yeah.
I've passed my test for fear of heights.
Stepping up with
flying colors. Not too high. Flying low.
Right, yeah. I think you passed it when you went up two steps in the front door of Grandma's house for dinner on Monday nights.
Yeah, that's about as high as up as I'll get.
That's right. So you actually can appreciate nature from three different perspectives. And it's really amazing. Now how to get there is that you have to go north of downtown, because we were in downtown a lot. We ate there, we were on the waterfront, and we talked about the park last time. You have to actually go north of that. It's not too far. And there's a 27-acre park that's been famous by whoever Capilano is.
Yeah.
It was built in 1889. And this bridge started then, but it was added more and more and more over time. And you're looking over these really neat temperate forests, and also you have a trail up to the Capilano Pacific Trail, and forests and waterfalls. Really cool. And you're not going quite far enough to where you would hit the ski resorts, but you are going into the lower elevations where it's really pretty tropical type forests with waterfalls.
Now it's time for our takeaways, where we tell you what steps you can take to implement what we've been talking about on the podcast. The first thing to think about is, if you're an artist, nurse your vision. All too often, the end product is out of focus and needs time to develop. Michelle kept experimenting with different types of natural canvases before she landed on rocks.
Yeah, amazing. Number two, hear what others have to say, but if you're compelled to go in a different direction, go with your internal guide. In other words, actually, she told me this. She said, I just stopped listening to people.
Yeah.
That she said. She said, the reason why I do this is because people come and tell me not to.
Yeah.
And that is the way I wanted to go. And so that's what she did.
The third thing to think about is search for the pulse of what the public appreciates. Michelle painted on many things before her work was recognized with the value that she provided.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. I mean, it might take a while to figure out, especially with something creative and something that isn't, quote, traditionally monetizable, right?
You're right. And last, search for places where you could get the most exposure. Michelle started out with galleries and exhibits, and then she settled in that marketplace on that island that is where we discovered her, and now she's world famous.
Now it's time to answer a question from one of our listeners. Today we have an email from Robert, He says, I'm thinking of buying a company. What should I look for?
One that has money.
Yeah.
It has a good sales. Good sales.
Established customer base.
You know, Robert, I'm brought in many times to look at a new company that clients are buying or people come to ask, you know, I don't know whether I should buy this company or not. The first place I always check are tax returns.
Mm-hmm.
Because they should not lie under tax returns.
Yeah.
But what you'll find out is that people do lie under tax returns and when they have small businesses, especially cash and carry businesses. And it really counts against them. And this is some advice to those of you who are trying to sell a business in the future. Don't cheat on your taxes. First of all, it's illegal.
Yeah.
But secondly, when it comes time to sell your business, you're not going to be able to prove what your business is worth. So look at their tax returns. And if they have been lying, which many of them have been that I've looked at, I just turn to them and say, you know what? My client can't pay you what you're asking because you have no proof of what you're making because you're not reporting it on a tax return.
Yeah, because otherwise you just have to take these people's word on it.
Right.
And they're already used to lying because they're admitting to lying on their tax returns. So they're already not trustworthy.
Right.
So that's not a good place to start off, not good foot to start off with.
So let's just say that the tax returns are good and that they're actually making money. The next thing you might want is you might want a financial statement prepared by a CPA because there are going to be things in the financial statements that are not going to be as obvious on a tax return because tax returns only have very small descriptions of what's there.
Basic info.
Yes, and you can look into the books or look under the hood and see, hey, here's some questions, some issues. When the last time I looked at this when a client was going to buy a business is that a lot of the inventory in his sales did not make sense. His purchases and everything, all the ratios were way off. The client didn't end up buying the business.
Also, that'll give you a good idea of what you think you can improve when you buy it.
Oh, yeah.
If you're looking at a business and it looks like they have a lot of inefficiencies, you're going to figure that if you buy it and make some changes, the profit margin's going to go up for you. But if you're looking at the business and it's really tight and they're doing everything right, then you have an idea, if they didn't lie on their tax returns, how much you're going to make from the
especially
business.
Especially in a merger situation where you're merging your company and buying theirs. Yeah, you could be more efficient that way. You can see it that way. So that's good advice too.
That's all we have for this week. Tune in next week when we're going to keep going in Vancouver and talk chocolate. Always my favorite subject. But not any chocolate. Healthy chocolate designer shoes. You'll have to explain that to me. But I guess we'll find out next week. Till then, I'm Brandon.
This is Rick, and thank you for letting us get into your business no matter where it is. Our music and podcast was produced by my son, Devin S. Norris. For all your music, composition, and podcast needs, check out devinsnorris.com.